We're ready.
Did she give you any feedback while she thought it went?
I haven't had a chance to talk to her. She sent the story via web, but she's up there doing some other stuff. The amount of traffic in the courts.
Oh, sure. Good story.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a regularly scheduled Public Service Commission meeting. Today is June 16th. It's 10 o'clock, and I want to call this meeting to order. Well, we have a pretty busy agenda, so I won't spend a lot of time with the opening comments, but I do want to just mention two things. One, Brian and I were both at MARC, Midwest Area Regulatory Commissioners. Is that
sounds right
approximately
to me.
What it's called? Last week, and a number of staff people, because you're now looking at the new chairman of MARC.
Ooh, that's right. We secured enough votes to win, so thank you for your help.
So more news on that later. And we had some staff people there because North Dakota will be hosting that conference next summer, thanks to Commissioner Kalk's leadership. So he had a very notable assuming of the throne.
Absolutely.
And you can choose to share that or not. I'll leave that up to you. But it was a really good conference. It was in Milwaukee, and we had a lot of discussions with our fellow regional commissioners on a wide variety of issues, a lot of discussion on the 111D rules and the uncertainty that exists with that for everybody involved at the state levels, commissioners, the companies. Everyone is really concerned. We did hear from Janet. I forget her last
McCabe.
Name. McCabe. She's the person at the EPA, really, who's kind of calling the shots, I think, and most directly involved outside of Gina McCarthy. But she gave a report on what they're hearing, what they intend to change, and some of the flexibility they intend to offer in terms of the timing. And maybe not sticking so firmly to the 2020 years. And some other flexibility, but the most she would say is that we hope to have it midsummer, the final rule, which has been what they've been saying. And I've heard that from others that midsummer might be like November. So a very generous description of midsummer. So we still look forward for more clarity on that rule and following through with how then we respond to that. Monday, we came back and had our second hearing on Dakota Access, which was a productive public hearing. Had probably 8 or 9 hours of testimony in Kildare, and a lot of folks from the public were there offering their insights on that project. Our final hearing will be a week from Friday, I believe, in Williston, and look for more, public comment and more follow-up from the company. They provided. It's a really good opportunity for the company to come back with information that they, need to provide at the next hearing and follow up to questions that we have had. And so the multiple hearings really helps from that standpoint. But and it was good to visit with some of our commissioners in general about how that project is moving through the other states as it leads to Illinois, and their processes are very similar to ours. So. I think that concludes my opening comments. I will one more opening comment. I will pass it over to my colleague, Commissioner
older.
Chrisman, who is now today 1 year older than he was 2 days ago. So happy one day belated birthday again, Randy, and the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, and we won't dwell on that because there have been plenty of those.
Good to have them, though.
Not that big a deal anymore, but it would be if you didn't have one anyway. So. I will ditto your remarks on both the interesting comments and I think the important information that we've received on the Dakota Access hearings, and also compliment Brian on his new position with MARC. I'll say that while you were there, of course, we don't have meetings scheduled since that was a known thing that you'd be attending. So I've taken the time, some of this was just before that, but I've attended a number of the co-op meetings that, for some reason or another, a lot of them, they're not all right this time of year, but a lot of them fall in June, and some electric co-ops, some telecommunications co-ops, and I've been in Bismarck and Dickinson, Hazen, Park River, Steele, Carrington. I think I'm missing one or two. And it's been quite interesting for a federalist like me who believes that, you know, states should be the laboratories of democracy and that other states can then learn to copy things that have worked well or avoid things that didn't work well in their neighboring states. I think also with telecommunications and the rural electric world, the same thing is the case with these co-ops. You go and sit in on these meetings and they're all providing electricity or they're all providing telecommunications, depending on which type you're at. But they all do it a little bit differently. And so it's interesting to sit in and learn what one company's doing, what another company's doing. And over the course then of a few years, you see some of the things that worked real well being copied by their neighboring companies and things that didn't work so well being avoided. So it's been a really valuable time for me staying back here. But again, I do congratulate you. That's important news for the commission and for the state of North Dakota to have you in that position.
Is it my turn?
Your turn.
All right. Thank you, sir. Well, thank you both for the comments. But to be quite frank, I mean, it's a team effort. And the way it works is Mark is 14 different states, so we do rotate the positions around. So I started out in this path about 4 years ago. And the last time we had a president out of North Dakota was Susan Wiefeld. And it culminated with Susan and the staff here hosting the convention. So we're looking forward to that June 12th through the 15th of 2016. And we'll have the same thing. The Radisson's going to be our main hotel, if you will. And Sunday night we'll have a gathering at the Heritage Center, so we'll invite all the dignitaries and all the press, anybody who wants to show up. Monday will be sessions and tours and that kind of stuff, or sessions. Monday night we're going to be at the Fort Lincoln. And then Tuesday, actually, we're going to have some sessions in the morning. But then Tuesday, the commissioners around the country, the Mark region, are really excited to see what's going on out here. So we're going to probably go over to MDU and look at the Heskett Station, probably go up and look at some of the coal mines, probably get out and look at some of the wind generation. So it'll be a good opportunity for the state, I think, to highlight what we're doing here. So that'll be fun to work that out. Another quick note, actually I was contacted by the University of Minnesota, who of course the Bison do beat in football on occasion, but that's not why they contacted us. They've got several of their grad students are working on their dissertation and doctorate on the CapEx 2020 line. And so they contacted this commission as well as Xcel Energy, and they may be contacting some others in the group, but they're really doing a comprehensive study how transmission planning goes between states and regions. And so I thought that was very timely, actually, with all the discussion we're having here about RTOs, that now even the academic world is starting to look at some of that and some of the challenges. So I think I'm going to meet with her next, maybe this Friday in Fargo. But the point is, you know, Randy was talking about different groups learning and studying. This is the first time I've ever heard of a college looking at this, and it falls underneath their school of business. So I think they're looking at it from a business viewpoint. And last but not least, I wanted to congratulate Commissioner Fedorchuk and University of North Dakota. That's tough. But T.J. Oshie and the Blackhawks won a Stanley Cup here the other day, and he's a good UND grad, so I'm always excited to see that.
Excellent. Me too. Okay. Well, there are a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I do want to note there was two items on the consent agenda that I've added to our admin, or I will be. I don't know if I actually got the note to the folks, but I want to talk about some of the work that our staff is doing to collect fees for the one call on behalf of the vendor who provides that service, and talk in more detail about our involvement on that during admin discussion. Okay, moving on to the regular agenda. I have two items. First, I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Sakakawea Pipeline Company, LLC, citing application case number PU-15-114.
Second.
Secaucawea Pipeline Company has filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit for the 70-mile, 16-inch diameter crude oil line and associated facilities in McKenzie and Montreal counties. The facility is 70 miles long, goes from Keene in McKenzie County to a rail facility in Palermo. It's 70 miles, 16 inches. It has a maximum capacity of 200,000 barrels per day. And we will be setting a meeting for a hearing for this in the admin portion of our meeting sometime later this summer, probably in August, that will take place. And this application is interesting because it crosses the lake. And we have seen a number of these types of pipeline projects, some of them using existing pipelines across the lake, and a few that are attempting to receive permits to cross the lake for new pipelines. And those permits have been very slow, if not non-existent, from being approved by the Corps of Engineers. So hopefully some of those will start shaking free, and we can get that important stretch of territory covered with pipelines. That's it's tough for producers having the field divided in two by the lake. But with proper construction techniques, I'm confident that we can do the lake crossings effectively and safely. And it's an important long-term infrastructure that we need to have for the Bakken oil fields to be transporting that crude oil safely. So, well, I know sometimes our partners in industry in North Dakota get frustrated that our process isn't a little bit faster. I do point to a couple of pipelines that have been held up for probably 5 to 8 years by the Corps of Engineers with their permitting process. So I think that our six-month process or shorter is a far cry from that, and hope that we continue to, efficiently look at these projects, thoroughly look at them, and provide the permits so companies can move forward. So that's that sort of summarizes that little that agenda item.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order in One Oak Rocky Midstream LLC State Line 1 and 2 Gas Processing Plants Williams Siting Exclusion Certificate Case Number PU-15-113.
Second.
I'll just kind of quickly summarize this. The North Dakota Public Service Commission on May 18th of 2011 issued a findings of fact conclusion of law and order in case number PU-1010-666 issuing to Bear Pot Energy LLC a certificate of site compatibility for an energy conversion facility for State Line 1 and 2 gas processing plants. Those plants were, the names were converted to One Oak Rockies Midstream facilities. And in March of this year, One Oak filed letters to notify the commission that they wanted to add and de-ethanizer for the extraction of ethane on those facilities. That's a project that is taking place entirely within the existing permit of the facility, so this doesn't trigger an entirely new siting process by the commission. They certified with us that they are not going to be affecting any exclusion or avoidance areas. They've covered a number of issues regarding health department potential concerns and have addressed all of those. And so this order basically provides them the go-ahead for that project. And we did this without a new public hearing. We issued a notice of opportunity for hearing and received no requests for hearings. So this order provides them the go-ahead for that project. And the deethanizer is being added to extract and process the residual ethane for delivery via pipeline to Nova Chemicals in Canada. So I hope sometime we start seeing these projects being delivered to chemical companies in North Dakota, but that that date is probably a few years down the road before we're there.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Concludes my portfolio.
Okay, in order to keep a couple of coal-related agenda items together, if there's no objection, I'll take RC2 to the top of the agenda.
Sure. Makes sense.
I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-221, canceling roving grain buyer license number 3194, issued to JGL Grain, operating as JGL Grain LLC of Blue Springs, Missouri, and ordering that all North Dakota roving grain buyer activities be discontinued effective May 26th of 2015.
Second.
JGL Grain notified the commission they no longer purchase grain under their North Dakota roving grain buyer license and asked that license number 3194 be canceled. They notified staff that they'll be applying for a roving grain buyer license under the new corporation name, which is JGL Commodities U.S. Limited, and will not buy any grain in the state until the new license is in place. So staff recommends the request to cancel this roving grain buyer license effective May 26th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, then RC1, I move the commission adopt an order in case number RC-15-165, notice of violation number 1501 issued to Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, at the Coyote Creek Mine to affirm the violation, assess a civil penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty.
Second.
During an April 16th of 2015 an inspection of Coyote Creek Mine, Bruce Beachy and Zanna Brinkman noticed that a mixture of subsoil and overburden materials had been placed in an area of undisturbed topsoil and up against an adjacent topsoil stockpile. The subsoil and overburden materials were from large diameter holes that were drilled for footings for a nearby electrical substation that was being installed to support Coyote Creek's mining activities. In addition, cement washdown residue was noticed on the topsoil surface in the same area. The electrical substation is being built by MDU to serve the Coyote Creek mine, and it is considered a mine-related activity. A contractor for MDU was constructing the substation. Coyote Creek personnel stated that they had previously explained to MDU and the contractor that the subsoil and overburden material would need to be hauled to a construction site for disposal in a construction pad. So notice of violation 1501 was issued on April 24th. The notice of violation was terminated on May 22nd after staff determined that all the required remedial action items were satisfactorily completed. In fact, most of the required remedial action items were completed within a day of the inspection and prior to the issuance of the NOV. Coyote Creek did not request an informal conference or a formal hearing in this matter. Since an informal conference or hearing was not requested, the commission needs to assess a civil penalty and adopt a final order in the matter. The commission must consider four factors in determining a civil penalty. And the four factors are the history of previous violations, the seriousness of the violation, negligence, and good faith in attempting to achieve rapid compliance. So we'll go through these one by one. The commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day on the history of previous violations at the mine where the violations are found. Generally, the history of violations within the preceding 3 years are considered. Coyote Creek does not have a history of violations that require a penalty to be assessed, so no penalty on history is assessed here. The commission, on number two, the commission may also assess a civil penalty of up to another $3,500 per day based on the seriousness of the violation. Factors to be considered in seriousness are the extent and the duration of damage in terms of impact on the public or the environment. The area affected in this case was quite small. A penalty based on seriousness is warranted, and the recommended assessment for seriousness is $250. Number three, the commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,000 per day based on the degree of fault of the permittee. In this case, MDU's contractor placed the materials on topsoil and against the adjacent stockpile after having been instructed not to do so by Coyote Creek. And even though the violation was caused by a contractor, Coyote Creek is responsible for ensuring that all mine-related activities are in compliance with the applicable laws and regulations. So penalties based on negligence due to lack of diligence and reasonable care is warranted. The recommended penalty assessment for negligence is $750. And the fourth item, the commission may deduct up to $1,000 per day from the total civil penalty when a permittee takes extraordinary measures to abate the violation in the shortest possible time following notification of the violation. No deduction can be made for normal compliance, though. Coyote Creek had taken very prompt measures to remove the materials from the topsoil. Those measures were implemented actually even before the NOV was issued. So therefore, a deduction for good faith is warranted. The recommended deduction for good faith is $500. So in conclusion, the Reclamation Division recommends a civil penalty in the amount of $250 for seriousness and $750 for negligence, with $500 deducted for good faith, and the order closes the case upon payment of the penalty.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, I support the order, and I concur with Commissioner Christman's comments, but I will say that the coal industry continues to be held to the highest possible standards of anybody doing anything out there. And this is an example where a subcontractor does something they're not supposed to do, but we're holding the company liable, which that's what the law says we're supposed to do. But as we go through our discussion about One Call, one of the things that I've been frustrated with is you've got a subcontractor out there that does something wrong. The subcontractor's held accountable, which they should be, but you don't ratchet that up to the general contractor or the owner of the or the one that's asked for it. So I support this, but I think we should be using this as a model in some other areas as well. It's always amazing to me that the high standard the coal companies are held to, they continue to do good work. But this is just an example of, think about this, they're out there doing a substation. How many of these are happening around the state right now? And the standard they're being held to is the standard. But, you know, perhaps we should look at this as a model in other areas. We talked about pipeline remediation, about how we hold different people accountable. I just think this is something we should talk about down the road.
It is an extraordinarily tough standard. In fact, I really don't know where else in the construction industry the standards for this type of thing are as tough as they are on these coal mine permit sites. It is an issue there with our federal oversight as well. So we have to make sure that we do everything right to maintain that relationship with the feds. But yeah, it is an extraordinary standard, and I think that oftentimes when contractors are doing work on these mine sites, it's sort of a reality check for them to find out how easy they probably have it in most other construction instances compared to what the standards they have to maintain on the mine sites.
Well, it's certainly up to the company what they choose to do, but the subcontractor, I would think twice before they bring this person back on, anyway, for what it's worth.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, moving to RC3, I move the commission adopt the hearing officer's recommended order for the informal conference held in case number RC-14-846 and conditionally approve revision number 1 to surface coal mining permit number NACC-1302 held by Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, to add 352.105 acres to the permit.
Second.
On December 17th of 2014, Coyote Creek Mining Company filed the application for revision number 1 to their permit to add 352 acres to this permit for the Coyote Creek Mine. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the revision application, and the hearing officer has issued a recommended order for the informal conference that was held on the application. The area being added to the permit extends to the north and east of the existing mine area. The application will be used to construct a haul road to transport coal from the existing permit area to the Coyote Power Station. A truck dump and coal handling facility will be located at the east side of the area, being added in the southeast quarter of Section 10, just west of the power plant. No coal mining is proposed in this revision area. The planned haul road and other support facilities will be reclaimed when mining is completed. The application plans to have these support facilities operational in time to begin coal delivery in May of 2016. The mine production is projected to be 1.7 million tons in 2016 and 2.5 million tons per year thereafter. Coal removal and haul road operation is expected to continue until 2040. So I'll have many birthdays between now and then. The revision contains 320 acres of native grassland, 22 acres of tame pasture land, 6 acres of woodland, 3 acres of wetland and creek, and an acre of roadway. The post-mining land use acreages in the added area will be the same as the pre-mine conditions. The proposed post-mining topography and slopes will also be the same as pre-mine conditions. The proposed mining activities should not adversely affect the continued existence of threatened or endangered species or result in the destruction or adverse modification of their critical habitats. This includes the northern long-eared bat, a recently listed threatened species, which may occasionally use some habitat in the area being added with this revision. Some woodlands in the added area contain trees that could be suitable habitat for this bat species. However, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has not yet issued specific protection measures for the northern long-eared bat, so therefore a condition is being attached to the approval of revision to prevent Coyote Creek Mining Company from disturbing mixed deciduous woodlands before August 1st of this year, unless approved by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or until the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issues specific protection measures for this species of bat, indicating it would be acceptable to disturb these woodlands prior to that date. After that date, their nesting activities should be far enough along that it should not be problematic to the bats. The area being added to the permit contains some federal coal tracts that have not yet been leased. Coal Creek Mining Company has obtained the appropriate leases to disturb the surface of the federal coal tracts to the extent necessary, though, to build mine-related facilities. Coyote Creek Mining Company does not intend to mine coal on these federal coal tracts. The Bureau of Land Management determined that there would not be any substantial or adverse effects to the federal coal mineral estate by activities proposed by this revision. Coyote Creek obtained approval from Mercer County to conduct operations within 100 feet of the outside right-of-way of County Road Number 12 and to build a grade separation structure that will route the mine traffic under County 12. Coyote Creek has also obtained approval to close the right-of-way of several section lines in the area being added to facilitate construction of the proposed haul road and mining-related facilities. Copies of the Mercer County approval documents for the right-of-way closures in the area are being added and included with this revision. Coyote Creek published the permit revision in the Hays and Star, the Beulah Beacon, and the Bismarck Tribune newspapers in March and April. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and advisory committee members of this revision application. The commission received requests for an informal conference on this application from the Dakota Resource Council and from Casey Voigt with concerns about air quality and fugitive dust emissions from the proposed haul road and coal handling facilities. The informal conference was conducted on June 2nd, and the hearing officer issued the informal conference findings and recommended order on June 15th, ruling that the air quality issues raised during the informal conference are outside the jurisdiction of the commission, and that the application for revision number one to this permit satisfies all permit revision standards and the reclamation laws and rules. Coyote Creek has filed a stipulation of surety bond increase to increase the bond area and amount of the bond. The bond area was increased to include the area being added with this revision and some land that's already in the permit. The Reclamation Division determined that a bond of a little over $7.3 million is sufficient at this time to cover the required reclamation, restoration, and abatement work for the proposed disturbances. However, the stipulation of surety bond increase filed by Coyote Creek increases the bond to $8 million rather than the $7.3 needed. Our staff recommends that the commission adopt the recommended informal conference order and conditionally approve revision number one.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will then just add one more thing, Madam Chair. This permit, along with the approval of Mercer County and the acquisition of land from the landowners that were necessary, kind of, to me, opens the next chapter in lignite mining in western North Dakota. I think it's a big deal in our state history. And also for consumers, it means that the long-term continuation of dependable and affordable power from the Coyote Power Plant will continue for many years to come.
Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Culk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a note for the official record that if Commissioner Crispin still is here in 2040, he will still not be the longest-serving commissioner in North Dakota history. That'll give him 38 years, and so you'll have to get into 2042 to back that record, Randy.
How old will he be? Because we know his age now.
There's a lot of room there.
And it won't matter because I won't be here.
All righty then. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law and order, denying Northern State Power Company's Advanced Prudence 187 megawatt solar energy portfolio application case number PU14-810.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. A little background. In November of last year, NSP filed an application with the PSC seeking advanced termination of prudence under North Dakota Century Code, asking for 187 megawatts of solar energy portfolio to be added to their resource mix. The kind of jump around here a little bit, but what really set the stage for this is actually when Commissioner Weefald was chair of the commission, there was a rate case, PU07776, that NSP agreed to file an application for advanced determination of prudence for any proposed resource addition larger than 50 megawatts. So quite honestly, the commission at that time, forward-thinking, said that we want to make sure that if XL Energy is adding things to their mix, we want to get an early look at it. So they directed them to come in front of us for ADPs. Companies don't have to ask for ADPs. They can go build whatever it is they're going to build and then hold that request for the reimbursement to a rate case. But that was set the stage back in 2007-2008 time frame. And I think it was a very good decision because in this particular case, the company came in as they were directed to ask for advanced determination of prudence. They actually filed a request, actually back up here a little bit. In April of 2014, NSP issued a request for proposal seeking eligible utility solar resources to fill NSP's obligation under the Minnesota Solar Energy Standard, or of course the Minnesota Renewable Standard. So it's not uncommon for companies to do RFPs for generation mix, but they don't tend to usually say, I'm looking for this or that. I'm looking for X amount of megawatts, and then the projects come back in, and then you look through it that way. But nevertheless, that's what the company did. NSP selected three bids totaling additional 187 megawatts of solar energy The three projects are broken down. There's a Marshall Solar in the area of Marshall, Minnesota, 62.25 megawatts, Minnesota Solar 1 in Tracy, Minnesota, 24.75 megawatts of solar, and North Star Solar, a 100 megawatt project near North Branch, Minnesota, to be developed by Community Energy Resources. So they put it out for bids. They got back these three bids. Those are what they proceeded with. We, of course, went ahead and scheduled a hearing. And during the hearing, NSP was very forthright, basically saying that they put this out there because they needed to comply with some of the requirements in other jurisdictions. Our staff was also very good at looking through this. And really, one of the things that really jumped out at me was that when our advocacy staff really looked through this, they basically testified that this solar project is inconsistent with least cost planning. And one of the things that's always been the bedrock of North Dakota rate cases is need and least cost planning. And that's one of the things that really jumped out at me, that this is out of the ordinary. I'm glad they came in for an ADP. It wasn't like they chose to, because the commission at that time directed to them. But I think this is the way it was envisioned, that the commission tells the companies early what our thoughts are on these particular projects. So it was inconsistent with least cost planning. They also, staff compared recent load and generation capacity forecasts and testified that NSP expects to have significant generating capacity to meet its reserve margins and obligations until 2023 without the proposed solar portfolio additions. NSP's testimony also supported this. So it wasn't just one side saying they don't need it, the other side saying they do. Both sides of the equation said, yeah, we don't need it right now. That was big. Also, these solar costs would be increased. These solar facilities would increase costs to North Dakota customers without any corresponding benefits. And so the recommendation is a solar project should not be allocated to North Dakota jurisdiction. So I don't believe that this NSP's project of solar portfolio merits an advanced determination of prudence. Therefore, I'm recommending we deny it. This is a first for the North Dakota PSC where we've actually denied an ADP request. Every other ADP request that's come in front of the commission, the companies have made a very strong case as to why they need it, how it ties into the least cost model. The commission has been very generous with their ADPs, basically saying, yes, we agree that you need this. In an ADP, we don't say exactly what the cost reimbursement is going to be, but we send a signal to them saying, yes, when you come back to us in front of a rate case, that yes, you're going to get some type of return on this. So the signal I think we sent today is twofold. Is one is that don't come in front of us unless you do least cost planning and you need it. And the second thing is that the North Dakota jurisdiction is going to hold true to those principles of least cost planning and reliability. If other jurisdictions want to do something different, that's their choice. But for us, North Dakota customers shouldn't pay for stuff that they don't need and that isn't least cost. So everything appears to be in order. It was, in my mind, a relatively straightforward decision after we had the hearing. I appreciate staff's work on this and the company, because the company was very forthright in their discussion, too, as to why they were doing this. So, Madam Chair, that concludes my thoughts.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'd like to just echo Commissioner Kalk's comments and the way you set it up. I agree with you. XL, this was a pretty straightforward case. I mean, they came here seeking advanced determination of prudence, and they were really clear in their application that the energy or the capacity isn't needed to serve customers right now, and it isn't least cost. And so, in my opinion, that doesn't meet the prudence test. They came here, is this prudent? No, it isn't prudent if it isn't needed and it doesn't represent least cost planning. And they were very honest that they were proposing this simply to meet the Minnesota solar mandate. And North Dakota customers didn't have any say in the Minnesota solar mandate. So from just a practical standpoint, I don't believe North Dakota customers should have to pay for the result of policies in a state that they didn't have a say in passing. So I also support declining or denying the ADP in this case.
I think this kind of goes back to the federalism discussion that I talked about in opening comments. And while I have great sympathy for the people of Minnesota who end up bearing the costs of some of the decisions made by their leaders, I certainly don't begrudge the leadership of Minnesota their right to come up with some of these ideas that they have proposed. And you know, I think they're terrible ideas, and the way a lot of people seem to be fleeing Minnesota for North Dakota, It seems that a lot of their citizens think so too. But if they want to do it, it's fine with me. But nowhere in the federalism concept does it suggest that you get to shift the costs of your ideas over to the neighboring states. And that's exactly what they're attempting to do with this. And so I intend to also vote to deny.
I want to also mention advocacy staff at the commission came down very strongly opposed to this ADP. And one of the comments they made that I think bears repeating is a reference to the agreement that we have, the settlement agreement with Xcel and their future potential commitments to build in North Dakota. And in that agreement, they basically lay out that they'll construct in North Dakota by 2036, consistent with the principles of orderly development and prudent resource planning. And orderly development and prudent resource planning cannot occur as long as Minnesota trumps the process by ordering more generation than's needed. And that's exactly what this is all about. It's about Minnesota saying, we want more solar, and you need to add it by this date, whether it's needed or not. And so that then decreases the case for any North Dakota generation down the road. And as long as we support that, I think we're putting off that type of generation longer as well. So I think that advocacy staff laid out a lot of really clear arguments against this that were quite convincing.
Maybe it's just a phraseology, if that's a word. But from my viewpoint, not rejecting this because it's a Minnesota mandate. I'm rejecting this because it's not least cost planning and it's not needed. And I think that's the message, that states can do what they want, but if they follow through with the least cost planning and it's needed, it'll be approved in North Dakota. And that's where I think that as other states, if Minnesota had a mandate that said they're 95% coal, well then, you know, we'd let them do that, but we'd still stick with the least cost planning. And you can take that to gas. You can take that to whatever you want. And there may be a time when they would file an application that the solar would be least cost. So the message is not anti-solar here. It's anti-least cost and need, from my viewpoint. And so I think as we look at the cost of other renewable energy sources, wind is costs continue to come down. There's other things that are out there. So it's not saying, my viewpoint, that we don't like solar. Back to the beat the dead horse, least cost and need.
You make a good point about the fact that solar could be least cost down the road, because that we're seeing that with wind, and we have approved the addition of wind resources that weren't necessarily needed, but they were lower cost than what was available in general for energy. So it reduced the cost. So there again, wind was a least cost that displaced the higher cost, and in those cases, we've looked at that, and at least in one case, have approved it. So it's a good point.
I don't want to start an energy fight with Minnesota, but I will tell you that that's been going for a long time. But the point is, I think when we meet with our colleagues around the country, we were just, as you pointed out at Mark, we talked to South Dakota regulators, Iowa regulators, you know, Minnesota regulators. The regulators get it. They get the least cost planning. They get the need. It's the policymakers that sometimes drive a certain viewpoint, and they don't care about the cost to their consumers. And that's where I think we have got to draw that line for North Dakota consumers. And I would urge my colleagues, the commissioners in South Dakota and Minnesota, to do the same thing in some of these. And I understand they're in a tough situation, but you know, we go down and talk about what we like and don't like when the legislature lays out policies. And I would urge them to do the same thing when their chances come.
Is there any further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2 was moved to consent. It was just a contract. Item BK3, I move the commission grant the withdrawals of Dickinson Wind LLC 150-megawatt Wind Energy Center, Stark County, siting application case number PU15-111, and Dickinson Wind LLC 230 kV transmission line, Stark County, siting application case number PU15-133.
Second.
All right, thank you, Randy. A little background in this case. In March of this year, the commission received a request from Dickinson Wind LLC to construct 150-megawatt wind facility with up to 87 turbines. We actually scheduled a hearing for that on May 18th at 9 a.m., as well as the related transmission line. The hearing was to be scheduled to be held in Dickens State University. The wind farm basically was in that area of, I guess it would be west of Richardton, south of Taylor, northeast of Gladstone, on both sides of the interstate. So we had it all set up to go to a hearing, and we received a request actually from the company. They requested to continue the hearing. So instead of holding the hearing on May 18th, on May 13th, we had a motion that continued it until we heard back from the company what they wanted to do exactly. And so just recently, we received a request from the company, Dickinson Wind, to withdraw their application. And so I see no reason not to support their request to withdraw it. I mean, while it's not in any record we've developed, we certainly have been following this in the news where the county commissioners voted against it overwhelmingly. A lot of sentiment out in that area that there was not the support for the wind farm. So, you know, we're actually just following through with requests in the company, and I'm not going to try to speculate from the company what their next plan is. I do know that there is a lot of discussion I heard actually in that area in the Kildare pipeline hearing about potential other sites they're looking at. But at this point in time, what we know is that they filed their application. They requested to continue the hearing. And now we've received a request to withdraw it, and I support that request.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, I spent a fair amount of time reviewing this application, and you know, it's a large binder full of information. But I don't really feel like the time was wasted with this being withdrawn, because years ago when I had a lot fewer birthdays than what I've had now, I spent a summer working in the ditch laying a pipeline kind of through that area, and it brought back a lot of memories of those days, and glad I'm not working in the ditch anymore after having had this many birthdays. But it's an interesting process, and I think there may as well be withdrawn.
Is there further discussion?
Well, maybe just, and this is kind of off the cuff, and that's where I can get in trouble. I think one thing that this does kind of set out is the importance of local approval on projects. In wind farms in particular, you know, county officials hold the cards on development of wind. And I think that's the way it should be. And so in this case, I think that the process worked the way it's supposed to be. And it does just reinforce that while there's a lot of concerns out there about development, county officials have a lot of authority, a lot of viewpoint, hold a lot of cards in this. So we'll see where this thing goes from here.
Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, two to go. Item BK4. I move the commission approve Otter Tail Power Company's Environmental Cost Recovery Rider, case number PU15-131.
Second.
Thank you. In May of 2012, the Commission granted Otter Tail Power Company an advanced determination of prudence for the air quality control system, AQCS, at Big Stone. You know, the company came in at that time and said, we need to install these systems to comply with the MATS law and other things. Quite honestly, it was quite a robust hearing at that time. I was on the commission, and you know, we're trying to figure out what the federal rules are going to be, what the standards are going to be. And, you know, we granted an ADP saying, yes, you need to install what you think is appropriate. And since that time, a lot of discussion has ensued. And they're to the point now where they've been installing the appropriate system. The original cost for this was $489 million. And because of, I think, a lot of good work by the company, a lot of pushing back and forth by the commission, those costs have been moved downward to $400 million, still a significant amount of investment. The company has continued to install those devices. Last year, they were in, and there was an ECR rider increase to 7.5%. What this does with this motion today, it actually increases it to 9. Oh, of course, I shouldn't put the percentage in here.
Dollar.
And there it is, 9.19%. The impact to customers is $1.47 for the average customer using 1,000 kilowatts. So customers will see a $1.47 increase in their next billing cycle based on the building and construction cost of these required AQCS system. And one thing that I think was also a good decision of the commission is to set this out as an environmental rider to show exactly what these costs are for. This is for costs that are required by the federal government to run this facility that, in my viewpoint, that I don't know that it was necessarily the right thing to put all these things on there, because I don't know that it improved what they were trying to go on that, but that's a discussion that takes place at the federal level, and we oftentimes are dealt the hand to making sure we comply with those things. Otherwise, the facilities don't run. So it was the right investment to make because we want to keep that facility going. One thing I would say, it was the Big Stone plant as well as Hoot Lake, so it's not just the one plant. This will be rolled into base rates at some point in time when an AF Otter Tail comes in for a rate case. They haven't been in for a while, and I'm not encouraging Otter Tail to come in, but I know that at some point in time you probably will be. But one thing I would like to highlight is that, you know, North Dakota customers as well as South Dakota customers, and I think even Minnesota must get a little of this power too. So customers in this region have already invested $400 million in the air quality control system, and that's out there making the air cleaner. You know, depending how you view it, it's got different, I guess, values. But the point is that with the president's clean power plan, it threatens to jeopardize all of this investment. And so it's just bizarre where there's a plan out right now to reduce CO2 emissions would basically nullify the $400 million of investment that is put out there. And so as we look forward to what the clean power plan might or might not do, this is one of the things that the North Dakota Commission will rest strongly on. We've already made significant investment in these plants. We need to keep that investment going, keep these plants going. Don't try to run this thing on environmental dispatch because, on one hand, the federal government told us to put these resources in there. We did that. And then they're going to tell us that now you can't run it when you need it. So South Dakota, in particular, is in a big pickle right now with the clean air plan because this is about the only big generation station that they have. So the point of the order today is to approve the increase of cost of roughly $1.47 to pay for the additional facilities that continue to be instructed. But the long-term discussion on this plant is we've got a great plant down there. It complies with all existing rules. The guys and gals working down there do a great job. But we absolutely got to keep this generation facility in the mix for not just 1 or 2 years, for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just want to elaborate a little bit on that final point on the 111D rules. This project is really a poster child for stranded costs when it comes to the 111D rules. There's $82.5 million that North Dakota customers are paying for the improvements at the Big Stone project. Those were required by previous EPA rules, and they make the plant cleaner, and it's good. It's a good thing. However, now EPA is coming out with these new rules that stand to be layered on top of the previous rules. And so all of those $82.5 million worth of costs will not be realized in terms of benefits to customers if the EPA says you can't run that plant more than 40% of the time, which is what they have said. Coal plants aren't designed to run 40% of the time. They're designed to run 60, 70, 80, 90% of the time. That's how they function most efficiently, and that's how customers get the best payback for them. So even if the EPA rule goes through and is approved the way it is, and they are forced to shut that plant down to 40% of the time or even more or less, North Dakota customers will still be paying that $82.5 million for that for those improvements at that plant. Plus, they will be paying for the new energy that's needed, whatever it is, if it's a new construction or new power purchase agreements, to replace that energy. So that's exactly what we're talking about when we talk about stranded costs when it comes to the EPA regulations.
Well, since you brought up 111D, you know, and the potential of this plant shutting down, you know, not only does the proposed plan look at throttling this plant back to a point where it's almost shut down, but they base that decision based on the concept of marshalling the resources of a whole separate company to replace the power production, which, you know, I mean, it would be a move that's almost reminiscent of some kind of a third world coup or something, where you know, just go shut people's stuff down and take from someone else to replace it. It truly is right that it's the poster child for the bizarreness of 111D proposal.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. Finally, item BK5. I move the commission adopt the order approving Montana Dakota Utility Company's environmental cost recovery rider update and denying the proposed tariff revisions, case number PU15-143.
Second.
Thank you. This is similar to the Otter Tail motion, but, of course, once again, just a little different. All right. The in April of this year, MDU filed a request to update its environmental cost recovery rider for costs projected through June of 2015, basically for the Big Stone plant that we talked about with Otter Tail. And in MDU's case, there's also some costs for the Lewis and Clark station. They're proposing an increase of 0.396 cents per kilowatt on residential and small general customer bills. And I'll get through that cost down the road here a little bit. So basically, the costs associated with the continued development of the air quality control system at Big Stone, those are approved today. But what's not approved is MDU requests a tariff change allowing it to recover reagent and emission allowances as a result of the AQCS station at the Lewis and Clark and Coyote Creek MATS upgrades. And so I thought, and staff, of course, recommended it, and I agreed with them, that to approve the tariff now without getting a good feel for what the cost may or not be, it just doesn't seem timely. So we'll certainly go ahead and the environmental cost recovery rider approve that and let the company come back in with the tariff when they get a better feel for what the cost may be on that. And I think that while I appreciate the company trying to streamline some of their requests, I didn't feel comfortable approving a tariff until we get a better feel for what costs might be into that. And if things may change a little bit between now and then, I think that's appropriate. What this does do, though, as far as cost, it actually reduces the cost that we're paying, that MDU customers are paying on their current tariff by 60 cents per customer. And so how could you increase by 0.396 but yet be reducing your cost a little bit? Basically, when this was done last year, there was some carry cost from the previous couple of years that had not really been recovered, so they were allowed to recover them last year. Now going forward, it's actually going to be a decrease because they've been able to make up some of the ground and some of those costs that were carried forward from previous years. So everything appears to be in order. And in this case, there's actually a 60 cents decrease in cost for the next year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Madam Chair, that concludes my portfolio.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. All righty. We have a few announcements to cover. We continue to have a number of hearings on our schedule. Next week, we have two of them. We have a formal hearing in Stanley on the Plains Pipeline, 8-inch crude oil pipeline siting application. That's 9 a.m. in Stanley City Hall. On a good chance to go up and have a whirlwind.
Now we're talking.
And then on Friday of next week, we have the final formal hearing on Dakota Access, 9 a.m. at the Ernie French Center in Williston. And then that following Monday, we have another formal hearing in Rolette on the Rolette Wind Energy Project. And followed by Tuesday, we have a formal hearing on a Northern Excavating Company damage prevention enforcement case. So the next 2 weeks will be busy with formal hearings, and encourage the public to take the opportunity to participate and let us know what you think on any of those projects. And with that, we'll open up to any questions.
Just curious, I have to ask one thing. First off, Commissioner Fedorchuk, what was the cost of JF1?
The cost of JF1?
The Sakakawea.
Oh, the Sakakawea, Julie. $100 million.
$100 million. And do you pronounce it Sakakawea, or what? How do you pronounce it?
I am all about Sakakawea. I don't care how they spell it. Okay. And this one looks like Sacagawea, but...
In terms of the denial of the advanced determination of prudence for the solar, say NSP or XL is going to build it anyway, or you know, contract with whoever's going to build it, how do you put in a firewall so North Dakota customers don't get charged for it?
I believe that those costs, I got to think on that a little bit here, Dave. I think that the way I would look at this, and Mike, you jump in here if I'm missing this, but we're sending a clear signal to XL Energy today that we don't think this is a good idea. So any of those mechanisms that they would try to recover those costs, I don't think they're going to be able to do that When they come back in a rate case now, it's going to be a different scenario. There was some concern the commission had back on some of the wind farms we dealt with because some of those costs flow through the fuel clause adjustment. It just clicked in my head. One of the rate cases that we did, we actually restricted them from recovering these type of costs until we had granted them approval on it. So we have, I can't remember which one of the rate cases it is, we said specifically you cannot recover these type of costs. So that's what, and that came out actually in the hearing. So that's what the caller is, if you will. But to follow on through your question, let's suppose they choose to do it, which I think they will. They'll come back in at their next rate case, and I'm sure they'll put this in because even though the ADP is denied, it doesn't mean they can't do it. It just means we've set a signal to them that we don't think it's prudent at this time. Now, if they come back in and they show us a different set of numbers, they show us different calculations, we'll deal with that when we get to the rate case. What will be interesting to see is what the other jurisdictions do on this. That sound reasonable, Mike? Did I clean that up correct?
So they were proposing to recover this on the fuel cost rider, and so they can't. They can't insert those costs on the rider.
Had we not learned from previous lessons, we may not have put that in there. So it's just.
And I think that was the last rate case.
It was.
The settlement.
The restack one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a wind farm
that
came out.
They have to get prudence for power purchase agreements greater than 50 megawatts.
Bottom line is if they build it, you don't necessarily have to approve the rate recovery for them.
Absolutely. But that's a separate decision. When they come back for a rate case, I'm sure this will be included in their cost. But the current, when Commissioner Fedorchak had the lead in this, she set up that whole restack discussion, and that's still going on. And so somewhere in this might fall into the restack. I don't know how it'll all play out, but there's certainly a lot of discussion back and forth with us and Xcel Energy on what costs North Dakota customers should be paying for.
When's the last time they submitted a resource plan?
They submit one every year. They actually were in here for a PI meeting 2 months ago, and they kind of laid it out. And they laid us out different scenarios, basically three different types of scenarios based on what the Clean Power Plan might lay out. And they actually said their preferred scenario is to keep things going the way they are with some of their coal plants. I got the sense from Xcel Energy is that their leadership doesn't necessarily want to engage in these type of projects, but they're being directed to do it. There was one point in time where I thought Xcel was, and I still think sometimes they get a little bit too far out in front of themselves in some of the renewables and not looking at it, but it does appear that Xcel Energy gets, and it's not appear, it is, Xcel Energy gets held to a whole different standard in Minnesota than all the other companies. They're the only one that's got a 30% renewable. And I think that what I picked up is that Xcel Energy has a very strong nuclear portfolio, and sometimes the Minnesota legislature, they try to get more than their pound of flesh out of Minnesota because of that nukes. And so they're not even held to the same standard as the rest of those. I mean, Otter Tail is a Minnesota company as well, and they're not held to that, and I don't want you to be held to that. The co-ops have been exempted, but it does seem that the Minnesota legislature always goes after Xcel a little harder, so I think it's very appropriate that we push back as well.
The PI meeting Brian mentioned was not quite as it sounds like. It's a periodic information exchange.
The integrated resource plan that they're currently developing is, they filed it in January, I believe, and we've had two meetings. And it goes from 2015 to 2035, I believe. It's pretty interesting. And then they update it, I think, annually and as they need to tweak it as they go. But it's a significant plan worth looking at.
In regard to the pipeline project, the Sacagawea, pronounce it as it's spelled. how many other projects under Lake Sakakawea are there that are being held up right now? Do you guys have a number?
Well, I know of at least one other big one, Bakken Link. Is there a third, Julie? There's a Hess project that goes under the lake that is using an existing line, and that obviously isn't nearly big. They have the approval already from the Corps for that, I believe, or they're in the final stages. Yeah.
So that the Bakken Link that's being held up by mm-hmm. Army Corps?
Yes. They went ahead and constructed the portion of that south of the lake. And I can't remember if they've done the north side too and then are just waiting to link them together. I can't recall. I don't think they have.
How large is that section goes under the lake?
Oh, boy. They picked a narrow spot. Do you know exactly how far? It's south of Newtown. Oops, I pulled that one. The location of the lake crossing is like 20 miles south of Newtown in a narrower portion. But I don't know the distance. We can look that up for you, Nick.
As far as the Dickinson Wind withdrawal, if they wanted to, reapply at a different location, it would have to be an entirely new application that they couldn't just come back and revive this application.
That is correct. They requested to withdraw this application. So had they wanted to modify this application, they could have gone that route, but they've requested to withdraw it. So if they decide to build another facility, they'll have to put in a whole new application. And there's a lot of things that could happen. Maybe they'll use part of this existing area for another wind farm, but it'll have to be a whole new one. And it'll be the same thing. I'm just guessing if they do it, it'll be somewhere in that region. The transmission line will change location a little bit. So I'm sure they probably have to go out and do some environmental studies before they can even get to the next level.
Do you know if they had obtained any easements already?
I do not know that. We didn't get to the point of the hearing where we'd have asked questions on that. But, actually, let me back up here. Absolutely, they would have received easements because wind farms are different. A pipeline, they can pick a route, or a power line, you can pick a route, and then you work on your easements. You don't just put a wind farm on somebody's property. So they would have secured easements for every one of the locations of the wind towers. So that, absolutely, they have easements in place. So that's a separate discussion with the local zoning authorities, but there are people that, quote, unquote, thought they were going to have wind turbines in their property that now are not going to have wind farms in their property. So I guess I'd never thought that all the way through, but that's absolutely, there's easements in place.
Yeah, within the application, there's always a map, and it shows participating landowners. And then if there's a non-participant in the edge that kind of goes into the area or in the middle somewhere, that's usually highlighted in a different color. So I'm certain that there were a pretty significant number of easements already acquired.
And they don't ever show the towers on land that they don't have an easement for.
Right.
In the applications.
Even to extend upon that a little bit, Mike, to open up a new Pandora's box, one of the things the commission saw back when I first got here was some of the wind developers were having landowners kick in money for easements and potential projects, and it resulted in some of the legislation that came out, and I think it was a 2009 session, and the company called Just Wind comes to mind, where they had landowners kicking in money, and all of a sudden they didn't build the project, and it went really bad. And so I believe that the North Dakota legislature has made some nice changes in how they deal with leases and easements to make sure customers and consumers don't get taken advantage of in some of these wind farm dealings. So it'll be interesting what we may hear on that in the next few weeks. Hopefully nothing. But I remember when the Just Wind thing kind of fell apart a little bit, we heard quickly from a lot of people that had signed easements and kicked in money to be part of this project. But I think that model has completely changed.
Just on the big stone, just sounded familiar when you started talking about it, and I'd done a story back in December of 2013 when you approved environmental cost recovery tariffs and rate increases for Otter Tail and MDU to offset the cost of pollution control equipment at Big Stone. Are these new increases on top of those? Because back then it was an additional average monthly increase of $2.70 for Otter Tail and $1.52 for MDU.
The answer is yes.
So it would actually be a reduction for MDU?
A reduction of 60 cents for whatever the MDU rates were then, or an increase of $1.47 for the Otter Tail customers.
Okay, so that this is separate from that then?
Well, it's not separate. It's not separate, but
it's not an adjustment of those increases. It's a different...
Correct. It's a piling on, if you will, for the $1.47 for Otter Tail and a reduction of that 60 cents for MDU.
Represents the ongoing costs, so the costs accumulating for the construction project. And so now there's more costs, so there's more to recover.
But that's a good point, Mike. Maybe next year for the other Mike, we can incorporate that as the total cost of this project since we started it so we can get a better feel for what the bill amount is for this.
Mm-hmm.
Just a curiosity, then, when is that project supposed to be completed?
Oh, boy. I got to look over at Mike here. October 2015. So this year they should be all done, Mike? Okay. Does that mean Otter Tail's coming in for a rate case in January 2016? Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, none from you? All right. Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming and covering the news at the PSC. And we will take a 10-minute break, reconvene at 11:20 for the admin portion of the meeting. Thank you.